This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes... These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment. What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the Abby Zwirner civil trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Court is now in session. Honorable Judge Matthew Hoffman presiding. As always, there'll be no talking. While His Honor is on the bench, you may be seated.
All right, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor.
All right, what are we taking up first?
Your Honor, good morning. The parties conferred last night and again this morning regarding the substance of Dr. Shufflebarger's anticipated opinion testimony. She's the administrating expert on the behalf of the plaintiff, and we, as Ms. Douglas pointed out earlier, tried to reach agreements as it relates to sort of the scope of her testimony akin to the scope of defense counsel's expert's testimony that may be opining on the same topic areas. Here's where we are. We have specifically highlighted for defense counsel within the expert disclosure of Dr. Shufflebarger, which I have and I can provide to you if it's helpful in a highlighted form, or if you have your own copy, I can point you to those portions.
I just want to make sure I've got page 3 and 4 of your expert designation.
And that is exactly where we're focused.
Okay.
And if would Your Honor like me to point out what we're talking about? So on page 3, essentially the third paragraph down, there's a sentence that begins with, "It is a fundamental expectation." It's the third sentence down. So we intend to elicit the testimony of Dr. Shufflebarger related to that opinion all the way to where the sentence ends with the word enforcement.
So is that on her? Is that your designation or her opinion that you're talking about?
It is her written letter opinion.
Okay, so are we under opinions, number paragraph 4 of her opinion?
We are, yeah, so if you, on subheading 4, if okay. That's what you're looking at, then there's a subheading summary.
Yes.
If we flip to the next page, okay. There is a paragraph 2 or 3 paragraphs down, it's kind of in between. It starts with, "It is even more concerning." There's a paragraph there at the top that starts with that language.
Yes, okay.
And then the very next sentence starts with the language, "It is a fundamental expectation." So beginning with that line, "It is a fundamental expectation," through the end of that sentence, which ends with the word enforcement. That is an area of opinion testimony that we intend to elicit. And then there is the last sentence, second to last sentence within that very same paragraph, which starts with, "She should have conducted." And then that sentence ends with, "at that time."
All right.
Now, the next sentence is effectively part of the agreement reached with counsel, so I'd like to elicit or explain that, Your Honor. There was discussion in pretrial motions about the issue of causation. And we alerted the court in the event that defense counsel intended or anticipated making any type of motion to strike or motion that we had not met a burden because we didn't elicit expert testimony on the issue of causation. That is why we had preemptively designated those opinions in the event that the court or the parties deemed it appropriate or necessary. We've now conferred and the parties agree that this case will not have a motion to strike or a deficiency motion on the grounds that an expert didn't opine on the issue of causation. And as a result of that, neither Dr. Shuffelbarger nor the experts who may be proffered by defendants will be opining on the issue of causation or proximate causation.
All right.
So then we get into the paragraph, two paragraphs down. The paragraph starts with the heading or the title at 140, but the sentence that I'm going to call the court's attention to is halfway through. It starts with the words, "It is inconceivable that a school administrator whose primary responsibility," and then it goes on from there and ends with...
Which sentence is that?
Sure. "It is inconceivable that a school administrator whose primary responsibility is to ensure a safe and secure environment would, after being informed," and then it continues and ends with the word parent.
All right.
Then when we get into the next area, the subheading conclusions at the bottom, Your Honor, the top, really everything until period, everything on that paragraph, the portion that we don't intend to elicit, but that we'd like to alert the court of, is that there's a section that there at the bottom that says, "would be expected to take immediate decisive action to safeguard students, staff, and the broader school community." And Your Honor, I'll put again on the record that we do believe that there is a special relationship duty that's been triggered by the facts that are before the court, and we do intend to make a motion later on as it relates to that, and that is because of the class of persons that Dr. Parker as a public official had responsibility to. And so our intention as it relates to her testimony on that regard, in light of Your Honor's previous rulings, is to effectively ask her about the safeguarding, but not ask her to specifically identify who she's safeguarding in that context, if that makes sense to the court.
Okay. All right, so are these agreed upon things she can testify to, or do I need to make a ruling on those four things?
Those are
that last. Be heard on.
Okay.
Well, let me finish, and then they can be heard. Then there's the last sentence, "Dr. Parker's failure to act on the critical information presents," and then it goes on that last page into the word "duty of care." There were discussions amongst counsel about using the term "gross negligence" because it appeared in some of the actual designations. Parties have agreed that we won't be eliciting, and we're going to inform our experts not to use that legal term, gross negligence, but that we recognize that there may be what we've been calling buzzwords that are contained within the jury instructions in terms of what amounts to gross negligence, whether it shocks a conscience, whether it's indifferent, that may come up during the course of the testimony, and that's sort of good for the goose, good for the gander.
All right. I guess we can take those up as they come.
Yes, Judge. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right.
Morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Judge, I'd like to address a few of the issues that were raised by opposing counsel, and then Ms. Douglas can supplement. She may have additional argument that she'd like to raise that's more specific and tailored to these arguments. But at the threshold, I want to note that with respect to Dr. Shuffelbarger's anticipated testimony, the defense would stand on its prior objections based on the motions in limine that her testimony is predicated on the false assumption that the underlying handbooks and internal private protocols implemented by Ridgeneck Elementary School do not establish the standard of care and do not establish the existence of a legal duty. And moreover, it would fail for Rule 403 balancing because it would have no probative value in this case, and any probative value would be vastly and substantially outweighed by the risk of unfair prejudice and misleading or confusing the jury about the appropriate issues in this case. I stand on those prior objections, Judge. But that being said, to the extent that this her testimony may come in, Judge, I would ask that the court issue a proper limiting instruction at the appropriate time so that we can mitigate the risk of the jury reading these instructions, hearing Dr. Shuffelberg's testimony, and conflating those principles by thinking that because there is a handbook that has these directives included in it, these are private rules, they don't establish the standard of care or the existence of a legal duty. So I stand on our prior objections. I incorporate them here expressly by reference. But nevertheless, to the extent that this evidence may come in, I'd ask for a proper limiting instruction. Two other points, Judge. I heard from opposing counsel mention.
Let me catch up with you. Hold on one second. All right, so for reference, defense filed its first motion in limb back on October the 2nd of 2025, and inside that motion in limb, there were designated a number of motions in limb. We are specifically referring to motion in limb number 3 as filed in that document. That lists two objections, that Dr. Shuffelberger's testimony improperly implies Newport News' internal policies and procedures. We'll call those internal policies and procedures objections. All right, and then there is Roman numeral 2, unfounded factual obligations, I'm sorry, assumptions. All right, and so you are obviously, those are continuing, correct?
Yes,
that I need to rule on. All right. And then you're saying that, assuming that I do overrule you on those two points, then you are going to proceed with another argument. Is that correct?
Yes, I would specifically just ask the court to issue or allow us to issue a proper limiting instruction, as we have done with the other similar rulings with respect to the handbook and internal policies generally.
All right, and what is your framework for that? I mean, what are you planning on offering for that?
I think at this stage, this is something that I would like to coordinate with opposing counsel at the appropriate time. We have not discussed the specifics, but I imagine a cautionary instruction would be something to the effect of, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you've heard evidence of internal policies and procedures implemented by Richneck that were in place at the time of the incident. Under Virginia law, these do not establish the existence of a legal duty. These do not establish the governing standard of care in this case. Nevertheless, you may consider it for another purpose, and there are some specific purposes that are authorized in the case law, and we can hash that out with opposing counsel.
But at this time,
we have not worked that out.
So if I understand your argument, you are concerned, and this would be Roman numeral 1, that a jury may misunderstand that the internal policies and procedures are the standard of care, correct?
That's correct.
But you don't disagree that they are a factor in determining what the standard of care is. You just don't want it to be the standard of care.
I would argue that, in essence, Judge, that's correct. But also, I would reemphasize that if this is coming from an expert, and given her credentials, it would bolster and enhance the credibility and weight of that testimony. And so it increases the risk of this misleading the jury and then giving them undue weight and further reinforcing the improper conflation of issues.
Okay. All right, so then basically you're asking me to rule on your first two objections, or your two objections listed in the motion in limine as filed, and then if that those objections are overruled, we will take up a limiting instruction at the end of the trial.
That's correct, Judge.
Okay, all right, just want to make sure we're all talking about the same things.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you.
Okay.
The other point which was drawn to my attention just now was I heard opposing counsel assert that they believe that there was a special relationship duty that arose. And perhaps that was a misstatement, I'm not sure. There were four claims that were part of the original lawsuit in this, Judge. The court had dismissed the count arguing a special relationship theory. So to the extent that counsel is relying on any legal duty that would arise from the evidence here, that the evidence that the jury can rely on to render a verdict in this case, I would argue that is improper. The court has already addressed that, has dismissed that alternative legal theory. This would be improper at this stage to raise it. And it's well established, I would stand on my prior arguments that led to that motion to dismiss on summary judgment, that there is no special relationship that applies here, either de jure or de facto, and that is what the court ruled.
All right, I will probably take that issue up again after I hear from Ms. Douglas.
Thank you,
Judge. Other ones. All right.
I think Mr. Hogan addressed all of my.
Okay. That was everything? Okay. All right, very good. So I am going to overrule the motion in limb for the two arguments on internal policies and procedure objections and unfounded factual assumptions, and I'm going to allow her testimony and overrule those objections. However, I will grant a limiting instruction, and we will work on that language at the end, towards the end of the trials, and that will also be based on what she actually does testify to, I think. All right, so now I am going to ask that you address again the argument about eliciting testimony about a special relationship, because that issue is not going to be before the jury.
Yes, Judge. I think the and we recognize that the court ruled on this issue at the summary judgment phase of this case, and I think what that recognizes, at least procedurally, is that a special relationship was alleged, and it was alleged sufficiently on the pleadings, and the court, in a mixed question of law and fact at the summary judgment phase, determined that there wasn't sufficient evidence to support a determination of a special relationship at that time. Now, in a circumstance of a trial, evidence is before the court, and that evidence may or may not differ from the evidence that Your Honor deemed sufficient or insufficient at the time that Your Honor ruled on the summary judgment issue. But because evidence is before the court at this point, and essentially at some stage there will be a request of certain duty instructions that go to the jury, I wanted to alert the court that that is an issue that we intend to ask the court to reconsider at that time. And it's specifically related to the evidentiary foundation, both that's been laid thus far and what we think will continue to be laid as it relates to the facts of this case, and as it's akin to the Bernadette case, and then akin to the Burns v. Gagnon case, although the Burns v. Gagnon case decided no special relationship. In the Bernadette case, it talked about an individual in a public official in a capacity, and the discussion in that case is the courts do not impose a special relationship on a public official to the people at large, and just generally speaking to every citizen that is around, and we recognize that. And Bernadette recognized that. And the difference in Bernadette was that there was a specific individual, or as the courts say, a class of individuals with whom there was an appreciated danger or risk. And in light of that, that public official then had a special relationship, not an assumed duty of care, but a special relationship with those individuals, that class of individuals, in order to take affirmative action. And the Burns v. Gagnon case, when observing that, said explicitly, we concluded that a special relationship existed, that is, talking about the Burdette case, between the deputy sheriff and a motorist because the sheriff knew or should have known that the motorist was in great danger of serious bodily injury or death. And so one of the issues that comes up as it relates, and it continues, and this is where the Burns court contrasts it with the Burdette court, and says, in this case, by contract, there is no evidence in the record suggesting that Burns knew or should have known that Gagnon was in great danger of serious bodily injury or death. What we know at this point in the proceedings, specifically from the testimony of Ms. Farish yesterday morning, and then again throughout the afternoon in the testimony of Ms. Kovac, is that there was a certain appreciated danger of a firearm on campus that posed a danger, and that danger that we're talking about a firearm, we're not talking about a circumstance in which in Burns v. Gagnon there was a potential fight, right? Two different potential dangers in that circumstance. With the firearm, we're talking about a great danger of serious bodily injury or death. That is, frankly, Joe, that's why everyone's here today. And so in light of that, and in light of the testimony that's come out as it relates to Ms. Dr. Parker's knowledge of it, we intend at some point in this trial to propose to the court, A, to reconsider that ruling, and then B, to issue an instruction on that. And that's one of the reasons we were hesitant and objected during opening statement of opposing counsel, which is we don't know what the duties are that are going to be advised to the jury at the end of this case. And so we're not asking the court to reconsider it at this time. We recognize that the opinion testimony of Dr. Shuffelbarger isn't necessarily changed by the context of the court's ruling on that issue at this time, but we also didn't want to sit idly by and not alert the court of that intention in light of the fact that Your Honor found it relevant to the determination to make as it relates to Dr. Shufflebarger.
So she's not going to use the phrase special relationship.
She is not.
Okay. So with that, I don't need to hear from you right now. I'm going to let you argue. And I'm not agreeing that I would permit that at all. That'll be saved for a later date. But I understand what you're doing and why, and I appreciate the heads up.
Yes, Your Honor.
So at this point in time, as long as she's not using the phrase special relationship, then I'm going to allow her testimony, and then we will take that whole issue that you just discussed up at the end after all the evidence has been in. And that's when I'll let you respond to all of that.
Your Honor, with your permission, could I address some specific arguments very briefly here? Because I think I now understand some portions of this argument that I think will assist the court when we need to address this in more depth at the appropriate time. May I do so, Judge?
All right, briefly. I want to get going here. And once again, your objections are completely preserved to this issue.
Yes,
I'm not holding, you're not being able to respond in full again in any way.
I appreciate that, Judge. I just want to clarify for the court's benefit and for opposing counsel. No. I want to emphasize that what this will amount to if the court allows plaintiff's counsel to pursue a special relationship theory at this juncture, after having dismissed with prejudice the special relationship legal theory, would be permitting them to resuscitate and revive.
Right, and I'm not allowing them to do that. Your objections are preserved.
Yes,
absolutely.
Your Honor. But also, I would argue that this would amount to an improper, it would allow them to amend their complaint in mid-trial, which would be a due process notice violation, and this would also implicate the prior arguments by the defense on our motion limiting, seeking a limitation of their theory of prosecution. This was precisely what we talked about in the pretrial conference, where there was a concern that plaintiff's counsel would try to backdoor revive dismissed claims. And I think that this is the path that they're heading on now. They are attempting to circumvent the trial court's ruling by saying, I understand, Your Honor, you dismiss this claim with prejudice, but let us pursue this alternative theory by another name. And it would be a de facto modification of the amendment of the complaint, which is completely impermissible, would deny Dr. Parker her due process rights. So I just want to put that on the court's radar, and we will address it in more depth at the appropriate time.
And your objection is contemporaneous, and I do note that for the record.
Thank you, Judge.
Okay. All right. Anything else we need to take up before we bring the doctor out?
There is, Your Honor.
Okay.
Do you want to do that first?
Sure. Okay. We just have one exhibit to enter, Your Honor. It's exhibit 119 from yesterday, defense exhibit.
All right. And which one is that?
119.
That was a text message.
Page 131.
Oh, there it is. I do see it. I did admit that.
Okay, and just to get it in the record, I think we have the original copy for the record.
Okay, very good.
Also, just to note to the court that any video clips will be placed on a USB drive and given in total at the end of the case.
Correct. And I guess, are you going to save them as that item number?
Correct. Yes,
perfect. Your Honor. All right. Fantastic.
So, on the topic of videos, a good segue. Last night we had sent opposing counsel clips that we intended to show during the testimony of now Detective Rulin, who was a first responder of the shooting, and those were body-worn camera footage. We've showed them to opposing counsel in order to try and streamline this once the evidence was starting to come in. They have, I think, a couple objections or a series of objections, so we thought it might be best to address those with the court before we impanel the jury and begin. The reason I say that is, for timing reasons, we'd like to call her before Dr. Shufflebarger because she has somewhere to go.
Okay.
And so we'd like to address that now, if we could, Your Honor, and then bring the jury out.
All right, do I need to see them?
I think you do.
Okay.
And in light of the substance of them, Your Honor, we're going to ask our client to step out, and we'll probably ask her to stay out of the courtroom during the pendency of that witness's testimony, depending upon your court's ruling.
Okay.
But we wanted to alert Your Honor of that, so it wasn't as though she just wasn't here.
Okay. And are you agreeable in proceeding in that manner?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Very well.
And if you don't mind, Your Honor, I'll walk her out to the room. She wanted me to show her where to go. I'll be right back.
All right, so we are going to voir dire potential objections to videos.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, very well. We are going to assume proper foundation has been laid, and then this is what they would play, and then I'll hear objections.
Correct, Your Honor. Right. And for context, these have been stipulated as authentic as part of the stipulation.
Okay.
Go ahead. This is...
Clip.
110A.
Plaintiffs 110A. Did you want to go clip by clip, or you want me to watch all three and then you can respond? You have a preference?
I think it would make sense to do one by one, Judge.
All right.
Because arguments differ.
Okay.
Judge, may it please the court. With respect to this particular video, I think there's a number of problems in why it should be rendered inadmissible. The first is that, first and foremost, under Rule 2403 of the Rules of Evidence, evidence is inadmissible even if it is relevant, if the probative value is substantially outweighed by the risk of unfair prejudice, misleading or confusing the fact finder, here the jury, or it is needlessly cumulative. This runs afoul of the needlessly cumulative prong, as well as the risk of unfair prejudice in misleading or confusing the jury. With respect to the cumulative nature of this video, Judge, you will hear in the course of this trial, and we already have fact witnesses testify that Ms. Warner suffered a gunshot injury. We've heard a medical expert come and take the stand and testify under oath in detail regarding the specifics of that injury. The jury has reviewed demonstratives depicting how she was injured, the seriousness of that injury. All this evidence has been established already. Numerous witnesses have also testified to the impact of that injury on Ms. Warner, as well as her family. And so we already have competent evidence before the jury on these points. This evidence would only be probative of establishing the nature of the damages, if any. And here, given the existence of competent evidence on that point already, any probative value is minimal at best. In contrast, the risk of prejudice to the accused is unfair and substantially outweighs that probative value. Because you can see, it is difficult to watch this video. It will have a strong impression on the jury. And of course, the jury is entitled to consider the evidence. They should understand and hear competent evidence that is probative of the material issues in dispute. And of course, damages are at issue. I acknowledge that. But this video is inflammatory. It is likely to incite sympathy. It is likely for the jury to render a verdict based on those improper grounds. The authority is well established. Those are improper grounds. And I also acknowledge that under Rule 2403, and the court's well familiar, the court may issue a limiting instruction to try to mitigate some of those risks. But I think that in this particular case, Judge, given that we already have competent evidence addressing these exact issues, this would have, this is so inflammatory that the jury would not be able to compartmentalize. You can't unring the bell once you see and watch this video. And given that circumstance, I think that it cannot be cured by a limiting instruction. The risk is too great, especially in this case. We will hear from other experts as well, I imagine, on medical damages and the nature of injuries. And so, again, this is cumulative. It is fails Rule 2403 balancing, and it should be excluded. The final point, Judge, is to the extent that there are statements on that video attributed to Mrs. Warner or anyone else, to the extent that is offered for its truth, I would object on hearsay grounds and ask that it be excluded and not considered by the jury.
All right, court overrules your objection. It's more probative than prejudicial. It's not cumulative, and it is not hearsay. Next.
110B, Your Honor.
Does she have something in her hand?
I have the shoulder, yep. Watch it, up.
Ow.
There you go. I don't want you to come out.
Why we split that clip up, but
I understand, Judge. There's a third video that's slightly different, but I rested and stand on my prior arguments.
Okay. Yeah, and I would like that. I'm going to overrule the objection. Objection noted for the record, contemporaneous, and I would like those that be one clip.
Are they different in time? That's why we split them.
There's something cut in between. There's
correct.
A cut in between.
And the thing that was cut in between was a conversation about the minor, which right. is why I cut it.
So you can't show it as well. I mean, you could just press the next clip.
I could
correct.
Just press the next clip, and we could admit them as exhibits, as a single exhibit number. I don't want to mislead the jury to think that it's that those two
right.
things happen in the same moment, though.
All right.
And if I may, Your Honor, it'll help with the witness to be able to go through one clip, play the next clip, and
okay.
then the third clip.
All right, I'll allow that contemporaneous objections. All right, and since court's ruling is the same as on Exhibit 110A. All right.
110C now, Your Honor.
Wait, we just did 110B, I thought.
C.
C now, okay. Seeing the clip.
If I could just argue from the counsel table.
You may.
With respect
just
to this.
Speak up a little, please.
Yes, Judge. With respect to this particular clip,
I stand on the prior objections based on 2, 4, or 3. But in addition, why I wanted to single this one out, Judge, is because this one has extensive inadmissible hearsay in it, more so than the other clips. It would be appropriate for Ms. Warner to take the stand and testify to some of the details she had here, but this cannot be backdoored. There is no applicable exception. They have the burden of establishing that. So I'd ask it be excluded.
You have a little more of an uphill battle on this one. You know, both the words and, I guess, the video itself. So I'll hear you.
Your Honor, the pertinent nature and the reason we selected this one in addition to the other two is, first, it demonstrates a different period of time, all of which, in terms of the timing, needs to be considered by the jury in determining the adequacy of their verdict. Number two, and onto the issue of hearsay, there's a moment in the video in which Ms. Warner says, "Can you tell me a story?" And that is not a pertinent fact in this context of we need that for the truth. But what it demonstrates, even if it is offered for the truth, is what 8033 permits, which is it demonstrates her then existing state of mind, that she is trying to distract herself of the experience that she is enduring in that moment. And then all the statements and the conversations that flow from that, whether her cat's name is Jack or Jill, and whether the dog's name is true or untrue, is not the substance that's important. It's the fact that in that moment, the severity of the circumstance as depicted by the video and by the conversation, which is to try and distract her from her experiences as she's going through them, demonstrates what is an element to be considered by the jury, which is her mental anguish throughout this process, that it was taxing on her to the extent that she affirmatively requested, "Take me away from here and tell me a story."
At this point, it's more prejudicial than probative. Now, if she testifies and it can be used for another purpose, I might allow that. So at this time, through a witness other than Ms. Warner, I'm going to sustain the objection.
Yes, sir.
However, I give you leave to try to introduce it again after or during Ms. Warner's testimony.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Exception noted. All right. Any other issues to take up?
No, Your Honor. With the court's permission and opposing counsel's permission, I'd like to go and inform the witness of the ruling so that she knows which two clips will be played.
All right. Any objection to that?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. So we'll take hopefully a brief recess.
Brief recess.
You just let Deputy Hopkins know, and we'll come right out, have the jury set, and we'll start our day.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, perfect. Thank you all.
Please rise.
More continuing coverage of the Abby Zwirner civil trial is coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.